This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready?
Hey,
are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right.
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.
Hey guys, I'm Nadia.
And I'm Shabazz. We're just popping up with some essential news.
The brand new series of Doctor Who has begun.
And that means the official Doctor Who podcast is here.
Whether you're a Whovian or a Newvian, you are so welcome. This is the place where we dissect every episode, explain all the Easter eggs, and bring you some exclusive content too.
Plus, we'll have fabulous special guests and Doctor Who mega fans.
So come and find us. It's the official Doctor Who podcast.
Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. Barclaycards slashes the minimum amount customers can pay off their credit card debt to the lowest allowed, 1% a month. That will more than double the time to repay it and the interest the bank collects. And 10 major ISA providers admit they're still not ready to let customers take full advantage of the simpler rules that began 3 weeks ago. But first, a Moneybox story has been all over the news this morning.
Our headlines today: calls for the government to take action to stop carers unwittingly racking up thousands of pounds of debt.
The Labour MP Sir Stephen Timms, who chairs the Work and Pensions Committee, says the government must take urgent action.
Tens of thousands of carers owe money because of benefit overpayments.
Well, we'll hear from Stephen Timms shortly, but first our reporter Dan Whitworth went to meet Karina. She cares for her 22-year-old daughter, Amber, at their home just outside Carnarvon in North Wales. Karina is being forced by the Department for Work and Pensions to repay more than £11,000 of her carer's allowance.
The dining room was turned into a bedroom for Amber, which is...
Oh, how lovely.
So this is her little room, so that she has ground floor living. So this is
It's very yellow.
That's her favourite colour. So
I can tell.
Just the sweetest nature. She's very polite. She's usually cheerful, and she's got a wicked sense of humour, and she's very, very smart.
And lots of lovely cuddly toys, a yellow hat, yellow rugs, yellow duvet, yellow pillow.
The Easter bonnet, they had to make Easter bonnets, and Amber won first prize. So she came home.
Proud mum alert. I can
Proud
hear that.
Proud mum alert. She came home with... Amber has a rare genetic disorder called Bardet-Biedl syndrome. And that gives her cognitive disabilities, so her mobility isn't great. She's registered blind because her eyesight is extremely poor. And she has probably a mental age of about an eight-year-old, even though she's 22. So day-to-day life for Amber is very difficult.
Because Karina is Amber's full-time carer, she used to claim carer's allowance, now worth around £82 per week. But with that allowance comes an earnings limit. Go even just a few pence above that limit, £151 take-home pay a week, and you lose the entire allowance. Now, the only time Karina got to herself all week was working a couple of part-time weekend shifts at the local supermarket when Amber's with her dad, which helped put a few extra pounds in her pocket.
And also as a social thing, because I'm a carer 24/7, it was a way that I could go out, hold my head up.
Because she was occasionally asked to work an extra hour or two of overtime, Karina unwittingly went above the earnings limit.
Some weeks I was £5 over, some weeks I was 50p over.
But wasn't told about it by the Department for Work and Pensions for years. So it came as a massive shock when one day, out of the blue, Karina got a phone call.
The lady phoned me up and she said, from the time that you started working, you were overpaid. And 3.5 years later, they told me that I had to repay £11,220. Which I do. I still only work 15 hours a week, but I have to pay them back £60 a month. and I've paid them back £2,880 to date, and I will be paying it back till I'm about 73.
What do you make of that?
To be treated like I'm taking money that I don't deserve is heartbreaking.
What do you want to see happen here? What do you think needs to happen to help people like you who are doing an incredible job looking after people like Amber?
The system is extremely complicated. You get masses of forms, and there can be 27 pages to these forms, and they're all done in legal jargon that normal people don't understand. They have a system where they can match up national insurance numbers, and they know that I've worked 50p over this week, but they allow these bills to accumulate and accumulate and accumulate, and then they hit you, and they don't care. I can't go out and work any more hours, so I relied on that carer's allowance to give me a little bit extra money, to give me that little bit of a cushion, and now it's taken away, and now I'm too scared to reapply, because I could reapply, but I would always live in fear.
Carina Moon talking to Dan, and Dan's in the studio now. Dan, a lot's been happening this week.
Yes, on Monday there was a debate in Westminster Hall in Parliament when MPs highlighted a petition calling for carers' allowance, that's currently £81.90 per week, to be increased by hundreds of pounds. Now, that's unlikely to happen, but even the fact it was being debated in Parliament was a step forward for campaigners. On Tuesday, an advisor to the government on dementia quit in protest at the Department for Work and Pensions behaviour towards carers like Carina.
Now, hers is one dreadful case, but what are the latest figures on the scale of these overpayments?
Well, they show that in the last financial year, more than 34,500 carers were being chased because of overpayments. Now, the DWP says overpayments account for 2.1% of the annual £3.3 billion budget for the allowance. Now, doing some maths, that shows the average debt is just over £2,000. But of course, some people owe much less. Some people, like Carina, owe much more.
And what's the Department for Work and Pensions had to say to you about this?
Well, it told me carers across the UK are unsung heroes who make a huge difference to someone else's life, adding claimants have a responsibility to inform DWP of any changes in their circumstances that could impact their award, and that's to ensure fairness in the welfare system.
Thanks, Dan. Well, listening to all that is the Labour MP, Sir Stephen Timms, the chair of the Commons Work and Pensions Select Committee. Stephen Timms, we just heard last year 34,500 unpaid carers being chased to pay back an average of £2,000, some of them a lot more. What do you make of how the department's going about recovering this money from what it calls these unsung heroes?
Well, I think the department needs to stop these overpayments happening. The department told my committee 5 years ago it gets notification from HMRC every time somebody claiming carers allowance goes over the earnings limit. But they ignore most of those notifications. So people keep receiving benefit they're now not entitled to, even though the department's been alerted. And we end up with these huge overpayments which should never have been allowed.
Yes, so that would help in the future if they acted more quickly. But it does leave the issue of what to do about people like Carina and some former Department for Work and Pensions ministers, some of whom actually ran the department, have called on the government to pause this clawback. Do you agree with them?
Well, I think once an overpayment has been incurred, the department does have a legal obligation to reclaim the money. So, I don't think there's any way out of that. But what the department must do is stop this problem keep on getting worse. So in 2022-23, for example, they say there were 36 overpayments they were chasing for more than £20,000. So those would have taken years to build up. Yeah. But the department was notified of that overpayment every single month. So why do they let it drag on for so long?
And that does raise the question, doesn't it? I mean, yes, people have an obligation to tell the DWP important information, but it hasn't acted on the information it has. You could make the case that it's made the mistake causing these huge debts and should write off the money.
Well, in law, the money does have to be repaid. So I don't think there's an escape route there. But a very interesting point I thought Carina made is that she's too scared now to acclaim benefit. And I can well understand why. I mean, the government policy is to encourage carers into work, But this system and this danger of overpayments makes it very risky to be working while you're claiming carer's allowance.
And of course, the issue is that once you've breached the earnings limit, you don't just lose the allowance for that week. Your entitlement ends. So you have to claim it again. And if you're entitled, if your earnings fall below the limit, you have to reapply. And Karina, as you said, is scared. Do you think that should be changed so that you could get it week by week? If your earnings fluctuate, fair enough, lose it one week, get it back the next.
Well, I think that would help. That would be quite a difficult change to make, and it would take a bit of time. But a very good first step would be to uprate the carer's allowance earnings limit in line with the national living wage. So somebody claiming carer's allowance in a fixed hours minimum wage job wouldn't be pushed over the limit just because the government has increased the national living wage.
Yes, and of course Karina earns too much on just 15 hours a week, doesn't she? The other big complaint is there's a cliff edge. You take home £151, that's fine. Take over £151 and a penny and you lose the lot. Should there be a gentler means test, if there's to be a means test?
Well, you make a good case, I think, for a taper to be applied to carer's allowance rather than the cliff edge. But that would be a major undertaking, and it's not something that the department could introduce very quickly. So that's why I want them really to focus on stopping these overpayments occurring, which they can do while taking a bit longer to think about what form this benefit should take in the future.
And very briefly, Stephen, will your select committee be calling for changes in the way the threshold is fixed and managed, in a word?
Well, we've taken evidence this week. It's the second of our evidence sessions on carer's allowance, and the committee will be considering what next steps we should take in the light of the evidence we've received.
We look forward to that. Thanks very much to Stephen Timms, Chair of the Work and Pension Select Committee. Now, this week's Money Box Live is about carers and caring. Are you a carer or being cared for? How is it for you? Email us, moneyboxbbc@bbc.co.uk. And Felicity Hannah counts the cost of caring. That's Money Box Live Wednesday at 3. The UK's biggest credit card provider, Barclaycard, has announced it will slash the amount its customers pay from their debt each month. Currently, they must pay 2.5% or more than 3% of what they owe. But from July, that's being cut to just 1% of their debt, the lowest amount allowed by the regulator, way below the average fixed by competitors. Now, on the face of it, that may sound like good news, but the change means that if you pay off a debt on your card at that minimum rate, it will take more than twice as long to clear, and the interest you pay to the bank will more than double. Rachel Springle is from the data service MoneyFacts.
If you have a card with HSBC or Lloyds, you'll probably notice you've got a minimum repayment of 2.5%. However, if you've got a card with NatWest or Santander, your minimum is around 1%. So Barclaycard is kind of joining those lenders at the moment in terms of what minimum repayments they have. And in fact, Barclaycard were one of the highest minimum repayments on the market at 3.75% for most of their credit cards. So it's interesting to see them moving this.
Yeah, so they really have slashed it. And you gave some examples there, but what's the sort of average that people have to pay?
So on average, you're probably looking around 2.5% or even 3% on the market. But as I say, there are quite a few credit card companies out there who are giving you a 1% minimum repayment.
Barclaycard increased minimum payments in 2021, so debts would be paid off more quickly. Other card providers did that too. It's now doing a U-turn, slashing it to the minimum. Do you think this is a shift across the industry towards going back to those lower minimum payments?
Quite possibly. Now, I do know that with Barclaycard's change, they did say that they're doing so to try and support their customers, for those who perhaps need that little bit more breathing space to move down their repayments. But I think what I would stress on this fact that that should only really be done temporarily. You shouldn't really ever be doing just the bare minimum on your credit card.
Sarah, Rachel Springle talking to me earlier. Well, listening to that is Sarah Williams, debt advisor and founder of the website getcamel.co.uk. Sarah Williams, Barclaycard says this reduction to 1% of your debt is for the benefit of customers, is it?
Well, as Rachel said, flexibility can be useful for the odd month, but many people can't afford to repay in full. And the only easy option they can see to select is to say they'll pay the minimum every month by direct debit. And that turns into a trap, keeping them in debt for 14, 15 years at the moment, going up to 30 years now with these lower minimums.
And is the danger that because they've said, I'll pay the minimum, when that minimum changes and they'll have had a letter saying, oh, your minimum payment will be reduced, and they might think, jolly good, they won't realise the true effect of that move and they will do nothing about it?
I think that's right. The letter does say that if you pay more than the minimum, you'll clear your debt more quickly. But I think people with a letter which says we're putting the minimums down from 2.5% to 1%, that doesn't sound very much. They're not going to expect that it will take twice as long to clear their debts and cost them twice as much in interest.
Yes, now this will apply obviously only to Barclays, well, it'll apply to all Barclaycard's credit card customers, but it'll only really affect those who regularly pay the minimum. Now, we got some figures prepared for us by the data firm Experian, from it runs a credit reference agency, as you know. They showed that of all cardholders, not Barclaycard, all cardholders, 13.2% who've used their card in the last 3 months only made the minimum payment. Now, that could mean well over a million Barclaycard customers affected by this. Does that worry you?
Yes, it does. Barclaycard is thought to be the largest credit card in the UK. And so I would expect that it could well be a million people affected by these changes. And they haven't really been noticed. No, but I've asked people, they've gone back and they said, oh, yeah, I have got that email. But not very many people have actually focused on it.
They haven't realised the implications. The regulator, the FCA, sets this minimum at 1%. You can't go lower than that. Should the FCA step in and make it higher than that to help people get rid of their debt more quickly?
I think it should. The FCA brought in rules, what are called persistent credit card debt rules, in 2019, 2020. They came into force. Barclaycard, when it increased its rates in 2021, meant that all of its customers then were never going to get into what the FCA calls persistent credit card debt, because they would be, their minimums would keep them out of it. Now with this drop, any Barclaycard customers that only pay the minimum payments, after 18 months, they're going to get a warning letter from Barclaycard saying you're in persistent credit card debt. This can't be what the regulator wants.
Sarah Williams of Debt Camel, thanks. And if you're in that position, paying a fixed amount makes your debt go more quickly than just paying that 1%. Now, last week, we reported on new regulations that should mean more victims of fraud are refunded by banks and other financial companies known as electronic money institutions, or EMIs. And Dan's back for a quick update.
Yes, we said customers of the EMI TIDE aren't protected by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme, which guarantees eligible deposits up to £85,000, because it doesn't hold a banking licence and is not a bank. However, the majority of TIDE accounts are in fact held by its partner, ClearBank, which is a bank, and therefore those customers' eligible deposits are covered by the FSCS.
OK, thanks, Dan. Well, as you may have heard, there was sad news this week that the former MP and peer, Frank Field, has died, aged 81. In the 1970s, as director of the Child Poverty Action Group, Frank put the issue of child poverty firmly on the political agenda. He helped the Labour government introduce child benefit in 1975, paid to every mother, and then without a means test. So it's a cruel irony that just last month, the latest official statistics showed 30% of UK children, a record 4.3 million, were in relative poverty in 2022-23, 100,000 more than the year before. In his 40 years as the Member of Parliament for Birkenhead, Frank Field tirelessly campaigned for the poor and disadvantaged. Here he is in 1980, talking to Newsnight on BBC Two about the cuts the government was making then to Social Security benefits.
All the welfare changes, and we've only discussed a few of them tonight, we've not talked about the cuts in unemployment benefit, real cuts in sickness benefit, the abolition of the earnings-related supplements, coming on to the real pension cuts which we will face this year, are all part of a package to help pay and help balance the books for those tax cuts to the rich.
Frank Field, Lord Field of Birkenhead, who died this week. 3 weeks after the government relaxed some of the rules about opening ISAs, individual savings accounts, and moving money between them, Moneybox has discovered that many banks and building societies are yet to offer these improvements to their customers. As we explained last week, it should now be possible to open and pay into more than one ISA of the same type in the same tax year. But our research has found many of the big providers aren't allowing customers to do this, like Moneybox listener Chris Beaumont from North Yorkshire.
Well, I've got two cash ISAs with the Yorkshire Building Society. One is fixed interest over a fixed period, and the other one is more flexible. So the key thing that I was looking forward to was splitting my deposits into both, and was very surprised when I got a letter from the Yorkshire Building Society to say that they transferred some money back and that HMRC were forbidding deposits into two cash ISAs in the same tax year, which puzzled me a lot because I understood the rules had changed. I think to send out a letter blaming HMRC when it's their decision is a bit unfair.
Well, Yorkshire Building Society has apologised that the letter sent to Chris wrongly stated the HMRC would not permit multiple ISA accounts, which, of course, it now will, instead of explaining it was the Society's policy. Well, after last week's programme, we contacted the 10 biggest banks and building societies that offer cash ISAs. We found that 8 are not currently allowing customers to have more than one cash ISA with them. However, 7 would allow you to open a cash ISA if you already have one with another provider. Another big change is the ability to make partial transfers between ISAs. Previously, if you wanted to move money from one ISA to another, you had to move all of it. Now the rules let you move just some of it. But currently, none of the 10 biggest banks and building societies we contacted us are offering this new freedom. Well, with us is Dr. Ed Jones, a senior lecturer in banking and economics at Bangor University's Business School. Dr. Jones, are you surprised at the outcome of our research?
I'm not surprised, to be honest. It is an unfortunate situation, especially given the budgets that the banks have in their technology department. This seems to be something quite simple for them to implement. And also on the legal side as well, it doesn't seem to be much effort needed there. So it is disappointing that the financial institutions haven't taken this initiative to offer more flexibility to their customers.
So if it's not the technology, what is it?
I believe it's a strategic decision that the financial institutions aren't too sure how to price these products, particularly on the cash. They want to, of course, protect their bottom line, their profits, and therefore they're conscious of what customers could they potentially lose while also trying to think of ways to attract new customers.
Yes, well, put the interest rates up, I suppose, in one way, isn't it? But if one or two of them have started, and some of them have, others will want to join in because this could be a competition issue in itself, couldn't it?
Yes, most certainly. When we start to see more financial institutions moving in this direction, the likelihood is that we'll see a stampede of new products coming to the market, and all financial institutions will offer similar kind of services because they won't want to be left out. But until we start to see that avalanche, it is going to be a slow process.
And while customers wait for this, they're losing interest. Should the banks hurry it up?
Of course, banks should be hurry this up. There isn't a technology and a legal reason why it should be this slow. And of course, customers are missing out at the moment because they're not able to get the best returns.
Do you think there will come a point when it should be made a legal requirement to implement them? Because at the moment, they're choosing not to. But of course, I suppose the FCA or even the Treasury could step in and say, well, sorry, folks, you've got to do this.
I think it would be a good step forward because, again, it is the consumer that is going to be winning. The banks, all they're concerned about is their profitability at the end of the day, and therefore, by all means, make this compulsory and let the consumers get the best returns.
Dr. Ed Jones of Bangor University's Business School, thanks. Well, HMRC told Moneybox it has worked closely with the industry to implement the changes. Some providers have already made them, and it expects others to follow shortly. Well, your emails, I have to say, have been pouring in, uncountably pouring in, many of them about the carers issue. Jasmine said she looks after her 83-year-old mother who needs more than 35 hours of care per week. Jasmine is self-employed. She works around her mother's care needs. She last received carer's allowance in February, but nothing since then. I can find it appalling. They can just stop it without any communication or warning. It just feels that we are totally unappreciated. And Peter says he got carer's allowance in Wales and £500 bonus paid by the Welsh Government was taken back from him. Many, many more along those lines. Well, we talked about flexibility of ISAs earlier. There's not much flexibility about when the Moneybox podcast ends, and that time has almost come. I'll squeeze in a reminder that you can hear the programme first when we broadcast live BBC Radio 4, Saturdays at noon. Prescription charges rise in England by 25 pence to £9.90 an item on May the 1st. So if you're listening to this podcast in time and have medicines to collect, dash off and do it before then. In Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland, of course, prescriptions are free for everyone. Do you ever wonder how the listeners you hear get on the podcast? Well, it's easy. They emailed us, moneybox@bbc.co.uk. We do read them all. Next time, it could be you. And dashing off to read those emails are reporter Dan Whitworth, researchers Sandra Hardiel and Joe Krasner, studio producer Craig Henderson. Our studio manager was George Willis. Our editor was Beatrice Pickup. I'm Paul Lewis, and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds. And now, Helen Lewis has left the chat, but where is she?
I'm Helen Lewis, and I have a question. What links family WhatsApp dramas?
I flounced off after someone made a particularly ignorant comment.
Russian state propaganda.
It's a very good platform for spreading all this pro-Putin position.
And a woman who married an AI.
100% I would never go back to humans ever, ever again.
No idea? Well, they're all examples of how instant messaging has changed the world. Find out more by joining me for my new BBC Radio 4 series. Helen Lewis has left the chat. Subscribe to Helen Lewis Has Left the Chat on BBC Sounds.
So, how do we get AI right?
Well, we need the right volume of data, the software to train it, and massive compute power, or...
Another one bites the dust. Are you ready? Hey, are you ready for this? Are you hanging on the edge of your seat?
But with HPE GreenLake, we get access to supercomputing to power AI at the scale we need, helping generate better insights.
All right.
Nice teamwork, guys.
Search HPE GreenLake.